about your past. I just want help. I love to laugh. About your thoughts, I just want to satisfy your faults. Oh, when you kiss me, when you miss me, hold my
2 minutes after 6 o'clock in the Greater Bay Area, broadcasting from Foothill College. This is KFJC, Los Altos Hills, and Kevin Odante, Sports Middle. Kevin, how you doing?
Hey, not bad. And Robert Emmett, great to have you on again, sitting in for Gus Lignos, who is in Chowdertown right now in Boston, but he is not going to Fenway Park tonight. He did not know the Giants were playing the Red Sox tonight. Unfortunately, he's never been to Fenway. Said he wished he was there, but he hasn't. Some sort of work commitment or dinner or something like that, but it looks like right now the Red Sox are up anyhow, but still would have been a fun time. But just wanted to mention, you know, especially with you on, who was one of our you know, cinema buffs, and our main, of course, the Norman Bates Memorial Soundtrack Show on Sunday, our Saturday morning, for a long time now, even longer than Sports Middle. Just James Brown, he did a soundtrack to a movie called Black Caesar, which I did not know much about, except for that it starred Fred Williamson, the former Kansas City Chief, who was always kind of a poor man's Jim Brown. And as what I last heard, was still making films in the, even though he's got to be, it was 80s by now, in the black exploit mode, which are like direct to, they're not even direct to disc anymore or anything like that. They're direct to whatever app you have in places like Italy and the Philippines or something like that. But I did not realize that originally Black Caesar was going to star Sammy Davis Jr. and it was going to be a remake of Little Caesar. Did you ever heard of that?
No, I didn't. That sounds pretty crazy, though.
And then when apparently Sammy Davis had some tax problems, and so then they just decided to get Fred Williamson and just make it, keep the title, but just make it like kind of a standard one of those, you know, hitman type movies. So,
wow, that's pretty interesting. So, what do you want to start with? You want to go with baseball?
Well, probably. You know, we probably should catch up on the NBA.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll do basketball because we're doing the playoffs, and you know, and our Golden State isn't there. So, so talk about what's happening with the basketball playoffs right now.
Yeah, well, first I should mention a college basketball note, and I'm sure when Gus is back next week, he'll want to expound on this. And that is a very disappointing news for local fans of St. Mary's, especially, and that St. Mary's is their biggest star. I mean, St. Mary's for years, as most people know, has been the stars of their team since Randy Bennett took over and turned them into a very good program. The one team that can still really be called a rival of the dominant Gonzaga program in the West Coast Conference, that he has his pipeline to Australia. And they've had all these great Australian players. And it turned out they had somebody right under their, right at their doorstep, who's been their star for years. He's from St. Mary's, is in Moraga, and right in the neighboring town of Lafayette. This guy, Mahaney, has emerged their star in the last couple of years. Well, with a new transfer portal, which you can say good things about and bad things about, he has decided to transfer to the two-time defending UConn Husky. So that is, I'm happy for him. I mean, he's got a shot at a championship, which he probably, a national championship, which he never would have at St. Mary's, as good as they are, but it's just a pity that, you know, it's one of those poses of pity for St. Mary's fans and just the sort of the rich get richer thing. But in terms of the playoffs, yeah, there's no Warriors this year, and now the Lakers are gone. And Kevin Durant, former Warrior, one of the great players in the game. His Phoenix Suns are gone right now. And at first, the Warriors aren't going to be in there. I'll pull for the Kings. And then the Kings got eliminated right after the Warriors did. And so I miss having a Warrior team to pull for. At least last year they got to the second round. And of course, for many years there, they made it to, most years, they made it to the finals, winning it most of the time. But at the same time, it's kind of nice to not have a huge rooting interest and just sit back and enjoy things. There's no teams now that I have the West Coast bias, and I guess right now I'm kind of pulling for Minnesota because they're a team that's never won anything, and they're a really entertaining team right now. But it's just kind of nice to just kind of sit back and just not have the roller coaster of your team, your favorite team winning and losing, and just appreciating some of the great games. But there have been some really amazing ones. There have been some dominant games, but there's also the game last night, which I caught the end of. I didn't see the whole thing, but I caught the amazing ending of the Knicks Philadelphia game. I knew going in that was going to be the best series in the first round, and the Knicks were up 3-1. And they were going to finish off. It looked like they were poised to finish off Philadelphia last night. And all the New York celebrities, including former Knicks, from former Senator Bill Bradley, Patrick Ewing, Larry Johnson, and the like, were all celebrating. And then Maxey on Philadelphia just had an unbelievable game. And I think it's only happened once in playoff history before, where a team was up by 6 points with 30 seconds or less, and they did not win the game. New York made some mistakes. Philly did everything right. Then New York again had a lead going into overtime, and then they just kind of fell apart. So that's definitely been the best game of the playoffs so far. But there've been a lot of good series. There's a series that Gus and I, when we were talking about it last week, we kind of disparaged this the least interesting one, which is the Orlando and Cleveland series. And unfortunately, last night, because they wanted the Knicks and Philly in prime time, that their game five was relegated to NBA TV, which I can't even get here if I wanted to get the pay. It isn't even available by pay-per-view. Not pay-per-view, but I mean as a premium channel here on my cable thing. That was an amazing game with Cleveland winning it. So it's fun, even if you don't have a huge rooting interest. I know you're not the biggest basketball fan, Bob, but it's a good time. It's not as intense as the NCAA playoffs where you lose and you go home. It's more of a marathon than a sprint.
Yeah, and both of those playoffs now are like, three games to two. So it's still very competitive, and it is sort of one of those things where that you never know what's going to happen, and that's sort of like you never know what's going to happen is sort of the story of the Golden State Warriors this year, So
yeah, and I still, we could do a postmortem on them forever, and still can't figure it out. But one of the great rumor that has started right now with the Phoenix Suns being eliminated the other night in a sweep, and with this meaning that the current Suns team will probably be demolished and they'll rip it up and start again, is maybe Kevin Durant will come back to the Warriors. I'm sure we're going to hear that rumor. You hear that rumor every once in a while, and this time I think there may even be a possibility to it. But just to update it, in the West, we have already seen four teams advance, and that is, as we've mentioned, Minnesota beating the Suns in a sweep, and Denver after the Lakers. I don't think Darvin Ham, the Lakers coach, is going to be around much longer. After leading in every game of that series, only managing to win one game. So Denver's going to play Minnesota in the second round. That's probably not going to start till the weekend. They're all going to be healthy, except for their coach of Minnesota. Unfortunately, it's just one of those weird incidents where the great veteran point guard Mike Conley just happened to collide with him, and he is going to be—he's going to have, I think, patella surgery or something like that. And I don't think he's going to be able to sit on the bench for that one. But everybody else is going to be able to get healthy, and I think that's going to be a great second round series. Oklahoma City also advanced, and they are by beating sweeping New Orleans, and they are going to face the winner of the what I consider kind of the strangest of the first round series, which is Dallas and the Clippers. And Dallas, that game is tied 2-2. Dallas beyond Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. Not a lot of household names there, but they're managing to get it done. And the Clippers, oddly enough, they they play two games with their superstar. Well, they have a number of superstars, but the guy I think is my favorite player on them, Kawhi Leonard. The two games that that he played in, because he's always been injury prone, the two they lost and the two games that that he missed are the two games that they won. In the East, every series is still going on, but I don't think that's going to be true in another hour, because it looks like the Celtics are on the verge of finishing off Miami. Miami won the game we were talking to that was going on during the show last week, but the Celtics have dominated them, and they're happy about that after Miami eliminated them last year. I'm sure about that. The current score is 86-54 with a few minutes left in the third quarter. Another interesting series is Indiana and Milwaukee. Looked like Indiana was going to take advantage of the Milwaukee's injuries, or Giannis and Damian Lillard both injured in that one. After Giannis has not played in any of the games. Lillard had a monster game one, but both of them have been out since then. But the Pacers went up 3-2, even though Tyrese Haliburton has not had a very good series. And last night, just with the reserves Portis especially, had just a really amazing game. So Milwaukee's still alive in that one, but I think the Pacers are going to take him on. We talked about the Knicks in Philadelphia. Game six is going to be tomorrow night, and also Cleveland, as we mentioned, up 3-2 or Orlando. I'm not sure that one. I think that one's actually the next game is going to be Friday. So a lot going on there.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it maybe the playoffs will finish by the All-Star break.
Yeah, I remember when they actually finished it. I know I've told this story before. Is that the first Giants game I ever went to? It was in 1967. The game ended up being rained out, but that sounds good, like your typical Charlie Brown type nightmare. Oh, I'm finally going to a major league game, and it's rained out, boo-hoo. No, it was a fun game, because I got to see, it was the first time at Candlestick to play the first couple of innings against the Braves, and then when it got rainy, everybody went under the awnings, and because the Warriors were in the finals that year, and they were playing right across the street at the Cow Palace against Philadelphia, and everybody just turned on their transistor radios, and there was like this huge, like, deity, like, Bill King in the atmosphere, because everybody had their radios on. It wasn't like you were listening to your radio. You could hear Bill King everywhere. And I found out the date of that game was like April 27th or something like that. So back then the finals were like now. And now it's May, as a matter of fact. I think the last time the finals even finished in May was in 83 when the Sixers swept the Lakers. But before we get away from basketball, I do want to mention It was very surprising, actually, the book that I just read, because it was very different than I expected it to be, and that is Chris Paul, the great NBA point guard who was with the Warriors this last season, after many years with the Clippers and Phoenix and Houston and starting off with the Pelicans. He has a book out, and I kind of expected, co-written by Michael Wilbon, who we see on ESPN all the time. Co-written a couple of the Charles Barkley books and the like, and I just expected it to be your sort of typical just short recapitulation of his career. But no, it's a very different, very stark book, very, very sad book, which it wasn't the light read that I expected it to be. The name of the book is 61, and it's a dedication to his late grandfather, who died at the age of 61, who was a heroic figure in North Carolina, Winston-Salem, where the Paul family was from, who was one of the first black owners of what were still like service stations back then, a Chevron station. And he was in a home invasion robbery. He was killed at the age of 61. Very, very sad. And just by some creepy neighborhood kids. And so Chris Paul, it was just right after he signed his letter of intent to Wake Forest, where he went to college. And when he played his last high school game right after that, he had a monster game, and he had a chance to break Michael Jordan's state record of 67. But once he got to 61, and his team was there was I mean his team had obviously won, so he wasn't like letting his team down. He said, "No, I'm going to just stop at 61 because that was my grandpa's dad's age." Very, very sad, very moving book, and hardly anything about his NBA career. But there is, and this is further sadness. He talks a lot about his time at Wake Forest under the coach he loved and respected, Skip Prosser, who died at an even younger age than Papa Paul, as Chris Paul referred to his grandpa, and Skip Rosser died at only 56. But it's a book I recommend, and I hope he, when he's retired, which, you know, if he ever retires, I hope he writes another one with more stuff about his career. So I give that one. 61 by Chris Paul. I give it a thumbs up.
Wow. Well, this is 89.7 KFJC, and this is Sports Middle. It's Wednesday night. Kevin O'Dante is on the phone, and I'm Robert Emmett sitting in the studio, and we're talking sports tonight. So do you want to go to baseball next?
Yeah, I suppose we should give – let's just give at least a quick update on the hockey – let's see, the hockey standings right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is there are – I just don't. The funny thing about hockey is, and it may be because, you know, I didn't grow up with it as much. It wasn't really in my family, and it was more something I became a fan of as a young adult, and with friends. And more than any other sport, I think you kind of have to talk about it with your friends. And I just don't know many hockey people down here. And of course, the Sharks haven't had a playoff season in 5 years, and they're one of the floundering franchise. But we should give an update. In the West, Denver. I already talked about Colorado. I mean, the Avalanche have advanced 4-1 series win over the Jets. Dallas and Vegas, who are playing right now, tied at 2-2. And who else do we have in there? Edmonton up 3-1 over the Kings. And who's playing? Oh, Vancouver, 2-2 at Nashville. It's hard to read my own handwriting sometimes. The Rangers, New York Rangers, swept the Capitals in the East, and while the Islanders lost 4-1 to Carolina. Boston's up 3-2 over Toronto, and the Florida Panthers sweeping Tampa Bay.
Mm.
That's what's going on in the NHL. And the Sharks are foundering, and as Gus talked about last week, that the Phoenix Coyotes are going to be moving to Salt Lake City. Good luck to them, I guess.
A lot of ice in Salt Lake City. Well, you know, the Sharks didn't show up until the 90s in San Jose. And they were still... although they were in town in 1992, they were still building the Shark Tank, so they were playing up at the Cow Palace.
Yeah, they played the 91-92 and 92-93 season at the old barn. And as I think I mentioned before, we used to get the Winnipeg Jets. Years ago, I never went to any of their games. There was a team, ages ago. I mean, there was a minor league team called the San Francisco Seals, and then they became the Oakland Seals, and then I think they were called the California Golden Seals for a while, and they were owned by Charles Finley, an NHL expansion team in the late 60s, but they never really caught on. And then we would get exhibition games from time to time. As I've mentioned, we would always get the Winnipeg Jets as the home team, and they would usually play LA just because they would get people in just because they could boo another LA team, essentially. And there was also a team, a minor league team, I remember in the 70s. A friend of mine always tried to talk me into going, and I never did, called the Shamrocks, who, I don't know, they might even have played at Winterland. I know ages ago there was, before it became Bill Graham's Palace, there was actually hockey played there.
Mm.
I think that version of the Shamrocks played at the Cow Palace, and they didn't even have boards. They had a cyclone fence around the rink. And they actually had a decent team. I'm not sure what level, lower level of the hockey minor leagues it was in, and they actually made it to the championship. But they did the wrong thing in the championship because they swept the championship. They won this minor league championship by sweeping it because it was over in like two or three games. If they'd had one more day game receipt, they probably would have been able to survive till the next year. But they ran out of money.
Well, that happens, doesn't it? Well, you know, maybe we should just talk briefly about the San Jose Giants. The San Jose Giants are the minor league team, and they're actually playing tonight at the San Jose Municipal Stadium, which I think is now called Excite Park. But
there had to have Muni had to have a corporate name. We needed it.
And so they're playing Lake Elsinore Storm, and they'll be playing them for the next couple of days and through the weekend, and then on Tuesday it's the Stockton Ports, and so that it's one of your old favorites, the Humboldt Crabs. Their opening day is May 31st.
Yeah, they always the Crabs always that's part of the college baseball season, summer league, in that it gets, even though it's an independent, what they call semi-pro, it gives college players a chance to play who have the possibility that they might get pro contracts, a chance to play with wooden bats. And so it's a hitters very friendly league, and you get some really high scoring games there because the pitchers generally are not very good. And the crab, it's funny because where I live down here, and the Crabs play them occasionally. I've never seen the Crabs since they moved down here to San Luis Obispo County. But the San Luis Blues, they are in that, have one of those leagues as well. And it's a 2-month league because it is, you know, just during the summer for college players right then. I always love the fact that the Crabs, I always tried to go on Crabs opening day. It was always a Friday, and it was the last day of the month. Every time on the last day of the month, there was a tsunami siren, which I was so used to hearing when I lived up in Arcata. Going back, I remember when they still called them tidal waves. The earthquake that was in Alaska in 1964, when I was in first grade, I remember hearing about it, and it really affected Humboldt County, and especially it further north, Del Norte County, in Crescent City. A lot of downtown was wiped there, so they have the tsunami warning sirens, and they always take the field at exactly at noon for their opener when the siren goes off at a little like Arcata Stadium. And I got to say, between the two of them, I like the Crabs better because it's just, even though it's a less populated part of the country than San Luis Obispo County, it's like the ballpark is just like right in the middle of downtown Arcata. It's in between the police station and the library, and it's tiny, and it's just always packed. And it's just exciting. They have a band, sort of, you know, that always plays at all the games, and they play hippie songs on when they play on 4th of July. They know every patriotic song. It's always loud and festive. Well, out here at the San Luis Obispo, the Blues, it's much more like bucolic and pastoral. It's just like sort of on the outside of town, not far from where I work, as a matter of fact. I often go there after work on a Tuesday evening or something like that, and just it's quieter, the music's on a low level, and you can just look out on the hills, and you know, the baseball's not going to be precise, especially the early games, but it's always a lot of fun. There's a number of them. There may even be some in the Bay Area. I think they are, but it just, you know, since they have so much competition, you don't get too much, you don't hear about them too much. Okay. But yeah, summer college games, they're fun.
Yeah, and so the cool thing is that the pupil, the players on the Humboldt Crabs, they stay at somebody's house. There's people in the community that open their house up to the players, and so that's, you know, they put them up and feed them. So it's a real seat of your pants kind of baseball.
Yeah, it's a host family thing. I know, I've heard about that. It's you know, it's, I don't know. I know there were a few guys. I think his name was Rincon or something like that. It was a catcher for the Twins. A few of them do make it to the majors, and they have, when I was up there, which was almost, you know, well, 20 years ago, they celebrated their 60th anniversary, so now they must have like come to their 80th anniversary, and just great community support as there is down here. I mean, I know some old timers. By old timers, I mean guys who are a couple of years older than me, but people who've lived here all their life, who told me about the history of the Blues, the other places that they have played, and everything. And they really do have a, teams like that really do have a good following in places where you don't have the major league alternative. And, you know, I have no interest in, at this point, it'd be too depressing for me to go to an A's game in their last year at the Coliseum. And just there's just something about the Giants' vibe and their ownership. I mean, they both have horrible ownership, but especially just the Charles Johnson, as we've talked about before. I just don't want to give him any money. But I do want to get back up, as you mentioned earlier, too, that the San Jose Giants are playing tonight. And I do want to, I haven't made it to a San Jose Giants game since I moved down here in 2016. Just before I moved, I went to, I think, their last game of the year in 2016. And it's such a great experience because it's, you get the, you know, just again, it's sort of, even though it's in one of the biggest cities in the state, San Jose, you get a, it still kind of has, it's an old ballpark that was built in, I think, in the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
They share it with San Jose State. There's a lot of weird little quirks about it. You get great views of the mountains, of the Santa Cruz Mountains, and down to Mount Aminam and like that. And it does have almost a not necessarily small town, but kind of a country feel to it, even though it's in the heart of a metropolis, which is nice. And by the way, I've been to, I don't want to plug them too much, but I've been to over 40 minor league ballparks, and a lot of them have good grub, but none of them touch Turkey Mike's, which is the San Jose Giants barbecue, which is just absolutely fabulous.
Oh, no, well, another thing I like is that the sort of hand-painted billboards that they have out, you know, that it, you know, you really feel, you really get a different experience because it's really, and of course, also being a minor league team, that it really family-oriented, that they have, you know, between innings, they'll bring out a bunch of, you know, like 6 to 10-year-olds and have them run around the bases with the Giants mascot, the Gigante, and it's... It's sort of like a much more people friendly way of watching sports, and it's it's always pretty cool.
And you know what? Even though I'm sure the tickets have gone up a bit in the 8 years since I've been there, I'm sure the tickets are relatively affordable, especially compared to major league games. And I know that was the one thing I found a Giants schedule, San Francisco Giants schedule from 1980, and I think the most expensive tickets then were something like $10 or $12 for like lower box behind the plate. And I mean that's so different. I mean, yeah, the inflation and everything like that, but it's nothing compared to what you have to pay now at any major league. Even the A's, who are just the bottom of the barrel, although they have been playing well this week. I mean, there was one thing, something nice about baseball always being a major league baseball, including being proletariat, is you could always get, you know, at least bleacher seats or something, but even those now are just unaffordable for a lot of working families. So when you have an alternative, especially such a pleasant situation as the San Jose Giants, it's really something you should take advantage of. And as you mentioned, Stockton, they're going to be in town soon. Fresno, who was a AAA team for a while there, they have a AAA size stadium, is now, we talked about this, I think, last summer, Bob, one of the shows you were on, that they have been downsized to the single-A level, and they're going to be here, I believe, on June 25th. So Inland Empire, which is San Bernardino, I've been to their ballpark, they're coming into town on the next homestand starting June 11th. And the Grizzlies are going to be playing a lot, as a matter of fact. They're going to be playing a five-game series, and then Stockton back in town again. Visalia later in July, and you know, Bakersfield's not around anymore. Oh, the Modesto Nuts.
Modesto Nuts. That's right. Yeah, the Modesto Nuts, the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, the Visalia Rawhide, great name.
Right.
Inland Empire 66ers. And I guess for Route 66, and but couldn't be, but because and then the Fresno Grizzlies, you know, along with Lake Elsinore Storm and the Stockton Ports, you know,
right.
They're your teams, and that's kind of a fun thing too, because there's some fun little names there for the teams.
Yeah, so we talked about last year, a while ago. I know they downsized the California League, and they got rid of the Bakersfield. They were the Blaze. They were the Dodgers for a while. And it was a shame because Bakersfield is a decent-sized town and usually support a team, but their stadium was so beat up. And also the High Desert Mavericks, who were in Adelanto, which is a suburb of Victorville, which kind of says it all. And that Adelanto It was one of these towns, a desert town that was supposed to thrive, and they figured, oh, a minor league ball team is going to last year long, and it's off 395. But the town never grew the way expected it to. And plus, there was already a team in the Antelope Valley and Lancaster. They were an established team, and I was that's one of my favorite ballparks in the Cal League. Was one of my favorite ballparks in the Cal League in Lancaster. Very space and aeronautics oriented, being right by Edwards Air Force Base. If you read the right stuff, you know all about Edwards. They ceased to exist, and that's when, which really surprised me, and I feel sad about that one. And that's, I think, when Fresno moved into the moved back into the California League, because years ago in a beat up old stadium I never went to, they were one of the mainstays of the California League.
Yeah, and it is tough for these minor league teams to make the money that they need to continue year after year. So it's a real struggle. And one of the reasons why that they're all very family oriented and trying to get people to bring the whole family, the whole gang. Yeah. Well, I want to throw this in that there is professional wiffle ball. There are 8 professional wiffle ball teams. They're all on the East Coast or down south, as you would expect. There's
by
like
down south, you mean
Alabama and okay. What's known as the U.S. South, not Southern California, and so that there's like today, the Central Cyclones are playing the South Stringers. The Pacific Predators against the Great Lakes Gators, and they actually have a draft for wiffle ball.
Oh, that's great.
And that's about to happen. So they were always talking about some team drafting a new pitcher or something, and they've got they're just going to be doing an all-star game too. So professional wiffle ball what's interesting is they don't have a catcher in professional wiffle ball. What they have is they have like a stand that they put behind the plate that has a square on it, and the square says strike zone. And they do have an umpire, but I guess assisted ably by the stand up backboard for the catcher.
Well, we got to mention, I mentioned it already, and well, they're still under 500, but out of nowhere, the A's are playing very well right now. They won 7 of their last 10 games, and while you could say, okay, they just swept the Pirates, who after a really surprisingly good start have kind of moved down to the bottom of the National League Central and kind of what they were expected. But prior to that, they won 2 out of 3 in Baltimore. And Baltimore has the best record. Well, second best, but the best record in the American League East. They're ahead of the Yankees even after their rampaging start at 19-11. Cleveland actually has the best record in the American League. So, signs of life in Oakland, but I still can. I don't think I'm going to be able to bring myself to. Whenever I get back up to the Bay Area again, I don't think I'm going to be able to bring myself to make it to a game then. But the teams that are dominating the American League West are the Rangers, not surprisingly, because they're defending world champions, and the Mariners, who we remember a couple of years ago had that great wild card run. Mm-hmm. But the Astros, I guess Dusty had something to do with it. They're 10-19 in the bottom. Angels also behind the A's, and it looks like Mike Trout's going to be out for a while, and obviously Ohtani is out for good because he's with the Dodgers right now. The Royals surprisingly good. Everybody's the American League Central. Guardians in first place, with the Royals, Tigers, and Twins are right behind them in the standings, and the White Sox probably the worst team in baseball at 6-25. They've got no hope whatsoever. National League, the Braves are still tearing it up, but the Phillies are only a half game behind them. Mets 5 games out, Nationals 6 games out, and Florida, after their horrible start, despite being a playoff team last year, They're bringing up the rear. National League Central, the Brewers, one game ahead of the Cubs, 3.5 games ahead of the Reds, 5.5 games ahead of your St. Louis Cardinals, Bob, as we mentioned. And the Dodgers, finally, after kind of a sputtering start, seem to be putting it together right now. They also winning 7 of their last 3. Padres and D-backs, and the Giants all in shouting distance, while the Rockies are they're bringing up the rear in that one.
And mentioning the Diamondbacks, I should point out one of the weirdest 2-hour game delays in Major League Baseball, that the game was delayed because of bees.
You know, I've heard of that happening before, and but not for a long time. I remember it was a game, God, back in the Russ Hodges days, where a Giants game was short. It was called because of bees. But then I never heard of anything being this long, 2 hours. I saw lots of the highlights of it and everything like that. But I thought the coolest thing about it was, so that when they finally got the game started, they had the professional beekeeper who came in and solved the problem for him. I guess it's kind of like, he was like, do you remember Red Adair, the famous guy who put out like oil dairy?
No, right. Yeah.
I guess this guy is like your kind of like Red Adair of beekeepers and stuff like that. They had him throw out the ceremonial first pitch. I thought that was utter cool.
That is cool. Well, this is 89.7 on your FM dial and KFJC.org streaming. And KFJC is having Sports Middle right now. Sports Middle, Kevin O'Dante on the phone, and me, Robert Emmett, in the studio. And where do you want to go, Kev?
Well, Giants, unfortunately, right now, it looks like they're not, you know, they've had trouble putting up the runs, and it's again that way. Whoa, the game's already over. Wow, that was quick. They've already lost 6-2 to the San Jose Giants. I mean, excuse me, what am I talking about? It's been a long week. To the Boston Red Sox, the game that Gus is not at. If he was there, I'm sure his support would have won the game for him. I don't know. Where do we want to go from right now? I didn't really follow much of the NFL draft, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
They
well, I can throw in a couple of other oddball sports. So this is like the high point of oddball sports, because usually you know, like summer is when people are out anyway, and what do we have coming up is the professional miniature golf U.S. Open, May 16th to the 18th in Kansas City, Missouri, and there's a $15,000 purse. So I don't know. I guess you'd have to live in Kansas City to be professional and win 15K. Actually, this weekend in Louisiana, it is the professional lawnmower racing. Professional lawnmower racing takes place like in Iowa, Maryland, South Carolina, and Alabama. And
now, what kind of lawnmowers are those lawnmowers that you sit
yeah,
in?
It's the rider lawnmowers. It's not like running behind a push mower. No, these are the rider mowers, and it's kind of like just like Thunder Road, that, you know, you're taking stock rider lawnmowers and beefing them up, and then taking, of course, the blades off the bottom too. So there's always lots of really oddball things. ESPN, the Ocho, ESPN 8, ESPN 8 usually is only on during the month of August. And the month of August is when ESPN gives wide coverage to every out there kind of sport that you can think of. So, you know, darts and things like lawnmower racing and go-kart racing and things like that. So you have a couple of months to wait, but ESPN, the Ocho, they call it, because it's ESPN 8.
Wow, yeah, I know that's kind of the dog days time. But I was thinking, are there still any miniature golf, you know, arcades or whatever you want to call it, in the Bay Area?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's one in Sunnyvale on the El Camino. There's one in San Jose way down on Blossom Hill. I think there might be one or two others the one that used to be up in Redwood City, that's gone.
The Marsh Road one, that's the one I remember going to.
Yeah, yeah. But that land's too expensive here, you know, that miniature golf doesn't, it's obviously, it's a $15,000 purse for the U.S. Open. You know, it's not like they're bringing in a lot of money.
What about that other place? It wasn't a miniature golf. It was on the other side of 101, a little to the north. It was, I think, called Malibu Grand Prix.
And oh, yeah, no, that's the one in Redwood City that's gone, because it was...
I figured that had to be gone.
Yeah, because it was... I don't know what you want to call them, go-karts, because they looked like Formula One race cars, miniature versions of it, and that was the Grand Prix part. There was also a full miniature golf course, and then there were also batting cages. But that's... That's gone, you know, that whole area on the east side of 101 up in Redwood City has seen a lot of development.
Yeah, that's just something that even when I was still living in the Bay Area, or living, I was growing up in Palo Alto with my grandparents in Redwood City, I mean, that was the back of my hand. But as an area, it's just a place I've not, a part of 101, I haven't driven up in years, because when I drive to San Francisco, especially once I lived in Campbell, I would drive to San Francisco or go up to, or beyond that up to Sonoma County or something like that. I just take 280, and I'm sure it's obviously the other great sporting venue, or you know, at least notable sporting venue on 101 around there, which is long gone, is Bay Meadows Racetrack. So it's like that. So funny, this is not a digression from sports, but I remember the one or two times I went to Malibu Grand Prix. And then I think the castle and or whatever it was called. I just remember them having one of some of the worst beer, whatever their tap beer was the worst beer ever. It reminded me of a place that came into my mind, and a friend of mine and I have touched base about its legendary lousiness. It was a place that was a kind of a punk rock staple, because it was near the Mabuhay Gardens, sort of in between the Mabuhay Gardens and I think it was actually, it may even have been the same building as the Transamerica Pyramid. It was a place called Clown Alley. Right? Do you remember that at all?
Clown Alley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of vaguely remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a burger and beer place.
Yeah, it was
place.
Like a burger and beer place. It was one of those places where that restaurants used to have those little cards on the front window that said, you know, what their ratings were with mm-hmm. local health department. I don't think Clown Alley ever had one.
no, definitely not. It was kind of, but it, the other place was kind of like that, which I don't remember as well. I don't think they served beer there. But does have a legendary status because of their signs. Was the Doggy Diner?
Oh, the Doggy Diner. Yeah. Well, you know that they had those big fiberglass doggy diner icons that looked like dachshunds with a chef's hat on them,
looking dachshund with a chef's cap.
Yeah, and they still have one of those in Streetlight Records in San Jose.
Really?
Yeah, they've got it tucked into the corner, and it's pretty cool. And I know that they have somebody's got. You know, some organization or agency has, I think, like half a dozen of them, and they, you know, that for very special events, they'll put them on a trailer and take them somewhere, you know. So, yeah, Doggy Diner, yeah. Well, you know, Burger Pit closed. As long as we're talking fast food places,
I don't remember Burger Pit.
Burger Pit used to have, I think, 10. Different outlets that, you know, in the South Bay that they used to have. There was a Burger Pit that was right behind the Valley Fair shopping center before it became a mall, and they tore it down so they could get more parking. But the last one, which was on Blossom Hill in San Jose, that just closed last week. And and so it was the last one, and I think it's like 67 years that they were gone.
That is amazing that I don't remember that at all. I mean, I try virtually every burger. Were they good or just one of these legendary?
Oh, no, it was a good place. You know, what it was one of those kind of hybrid places where they called it Burger Pit, but it was, cheap steaks. So, okay. It wasn't quite, the kind of awful things that, like Sizzler and those chain things had. But most of the people who went to Burger Pit were getting, they had, like small little cuts of steak and that were relatively affordable. So that was always a big thing. And because it comes from that age, growing out of the 60s, that it was, one of those, I don't want to call it a coffee house kind of thing, because, you had a window, you went up and ordered, and they brought it to you. But they did have a salad bar, and, it just had, it was a kind of a sit-down, it was a fun place.
Bummer. I wish I'd known about it. My favorite burger place in the county is actually in Cambria, which is, it's a town I love, but it's also, most of the restaurants there are rather expensive. But there's a pizzeria called JJ. They never had their pizzas. They have the best burgers in the county, and they're economical, too, which I like. But probably should veer back to sports to a certain degree, and this is sort of doing it.
Sure.
Very much of a tangent. Is every time I see Jennifer Garner in a Capital One commercial, I still get mad. And that's, longtime listeners of the show might remember this. That in 2005, I'm getting my decades mixed up. 2015, I always get the years right, but the decades. 2015, thanks to a good friend of ours, John at KFJC, who was a casting agent, I appeared in an AT&T commercial, which was filmed up in Oakland, that was aired during March Madness. And it was great. It was the best money I ever made for an hour and a half's work. John knew I was a big sports fan, and he wanted a commercial with non-actors, even though I did sign a one-day contract with the Screen Actors Guild. And I appeared in for 2 seconds saying, no, when I was watching a Stanford losing on the tablet they were advertising. And most money I ever made for an hour and a half's work, every time that the commercial was shown, I know I would get residuals from it. So I was always very angry when instead I was okay with the other AT&T guys who were on. There was a commercial back then with Shaq and Christian later, and I'm still okay with the current AT&T basketball ads with the one with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren from OKC, and the one with Carmelo and Perkins, and I think it's Ray Allen. When I see Jennifer Garner advertising Capital One, I still get mad, because when she was on in 2015, it meant my ad was not on, which means she was getting money that should have been mine. And there you have it.
Well, there you go. You get a long memory, Kevin. You got to like that. Well, speaking of long memories, and you mentioned Campbell earlier, the Wrestling Observer was something that you subscribed to. It had come out in 1960, and it was basically like a mimeograph thing.
I think 60 would have been a little too early, but it probably started like late 70s.
Mm-hmm. And so what it was this was a guy that had all sorts of insider information about wrestling, and would talk about what was really going on, so that somebody would get hurt, but they didn't want to mention that they really got hurt, so that they'd suspend him for some weird reason. But the Wrestling Observer was something that gave us all the inside. And insights into what was happening in wrestling.
Well, yeah, but what was great about the Observer was back then, the whole thing was nobody realized that the business has changed so much since then. I mean, I became aware of the Observer in the late 80s, and it was everybody still expected wrestling fans, that every wrestling fan was a galoot. And then what they call a mark, which just means the guy, who gets who gets taken advantage of at the carnival or by the three card Monty dealer or whatever. They were just people who fell for it, and they were idiots, and they believed that wrestling was real, and they did not pay attention to the fact that there were a lot of people who loved the sports entertainment and knew it was you know, that the matches were predetermined, and it was all like, it was all a setup, and they still loved it despite all that. And the thing is about Meltzer, what he did is he made a very good business out of those fans. You know, sort of on the sly at times, and it was just something that he built up. Dave Meltzer, the guy who was responsible for that, and eventually, you know, the business is very different now. And while there still are, you know, some people out there who believe that wrestling is, shall we say, real. I mean, an actual athletic event, and that could get into the other thing. I'm always willing to talk about it, just about how gambling's taking over everything right now. Is that wrestling finally took Meltzer seriously, and they took the. And I don't want to say this to say that it's on Phi Beta Kappa or a Mensa or anything like that, but it's the term that's usually applied to the fans who know it's fake. We refer to as smart fans, and they realize that Vince McMahon and all the other guys realize, hey, there is a market for smart fans. They finally took Meltzer seriously. So he has, that's a major, major success story. Do you know if he's still doing it?
I don't know. No. I think what he did was that somewhere in like the mid 2000s, he threw in with an online site the first fourth, or I can't remember exactly what the name of it is, and so the two of them were kind of working together. So, but he'd taken a little bit of a step back from the stuff that he had done when he was, you know, doing the mailing version of it, and the wrestling gives the wrestling
gives still at it.
I think
Figure Four Online. The Miz,
yeah, there you go.
Got a partner down at Brian Alvarez, Dave Meltzer, and Brian Alvarez.
There you go. And you know, they have their own wrestling Hall of Fame. That includes like all sorts of, the Dick the Bruiser, Ric Flair, mm-hmm. Fred Blassie, the Funk Brothers, Gorgeous George, Bruiser Brody, and a lot of course the more recent WWE superstars that everybody's familiar with, you know.
Yeah, kind of like with hockey. I don't watch. The two reasons I don't watch wrestling as much as I used to is, again, I don't have anybody to talk to about it. And even though I wouldn't know, it was always good to get together with friends, including, you know, our friend Steve and two KFJC mainstays, Alex Morgan and Lucifer Sam. We'd always get together and watch the pay-per-views and, you know, back at the. I mean, we had a couple of wrestling parties, Bob, over at Boys Town.
That's right.
In Palo Alto, and and occasionally going to matches up at the Cal Palace, and after they built it, the Shark Tank, just when you don't have friends to talk to about it, it's just not the same. But also, to me, it was sort of like when the WWF WWE ended up swallowing up the Turner Wrestling, WCW, and before that, the NWA. That kind of brought an end to everything, because while the matches were not competitive, to me the best era ever in wrestling was in the late 90s, was the competition between those two organizations, and they would have what's known as the ratings war, where Monday Night Raw would go up against, was it Thunder or whatever it was that had the New World Order and everything, and that was, they were both just so competitive, and that was some of the most best and most entertaining wrestling that I ever saw in my life. And once I knew it was okay, it's all McMahon, I watch it for 20 minutes, and it's just kind of like, I still enjoy it, but I'm not gonna, you know, especially with nobody else to chat about it, I haven't made any wrestling fan threads down here, it's just, you know, I can't make it part of my schedule anymore.
Well, you know, the growing up in St. Louis, that the big thing there was wrestling at the Chase. That was a Sunday morning wrestling show on TV, and the Chase Park Plaza Hotel, which was the classy hotel in St. Louis. That, you know, the other thing about wrestling was it all used to be regional operations. You know,
right.
that you know what happened was that the McMahons, that they had like the East Coast, and then they used their power to go national, and little by little were able to kind of run everybody else out, because they could, you know, the regional wrestling things were still happening, but you know that the WWF or whatever they were calling it, they could put their own card and book them in the same places that the local guys did and kind of snuff them out of business. And, you know, I just bring it up because the St. Louis promoter for wrestling was Sam Muchnick, who legendary promoter and a great friend of my dad's that they used to meet in the bar and at Jack English's bar. And my dad got to sit next to Andre the Giant because Sam would bring the wrestlers with him and come into the bar. And I got to meet Ric Flair. So
nice.
And it was a great thing. Yeah,
I know. He was, there were good promoters and bad promoters, but he was always the most respected promoter, in both by the wrestlers and by everybody in the business, guys like Dave Meltzer and like that. But there's great... Andre the Giant story. I read it in the late Bobby Heenan's book. And that was he liked to drink. That's how, shall we say, Andre the Giant liked to drink. And at one time he was on a plane, and even though they were in first class, he just did not have enough room. But he was also drunk, and it was like 6 a.m. And he was trying to like get one of the armrests out so he could like put his arm down, and the waitress. Comes up, or not, excuse me, the flight attendant comes up to him and says, "Hey, can I help you with anything, Mr. Giant, or something like that?" Of course, he said, "Of course, you can help me. He just wants another drink." And he says, "Yeah, of course, get me a screwdriver." She actually goes out and gets him a screwdriver, the tool. And Bobby Heenan says to the woman, he says, "You know, this man is, 650 pounds. He's 6'9". He's drunk. It's 8 a.m. Don't give him tools."
That's a great story. Hey, well, you know, who's the clown of the week?
You know, I was going to say, we somehow managed to get, I was thinking we'd have time to fill, but, you know, Bob and I, there's so much to talk about, and you and I, you know, we both have that Irish gift of gab, so, you know, I still have the nausea of how much gambling and sports has taken over right now. There's something we'll save it for one of those dog day shows. But I can always give it to, I'm sure I could get some sports gambling thing in there right now. But you know, I just want to give it to. There were two ejections this week, and I got to say, Bobby Portis made up. Right, they were just that helped their team lose games. In the case of the Portis with Milwaukee, they were already down in that game. He should not have lost his temper. He let the team down. But I don't want to give him Claude of the Week because he had such a great game last night. He's just one of these guys in the NBA I really like. So I can't give it to him. But I got to give it to Russell Westbrook because he in the game, the Clippers game the other day when they were still in this. I think they I can't remember whether it was the game they won or not, but. Or whether it was a game where they blew the huge lead and almost lost. I think it might have been that game, but it was just a game where he completely lost his cool and just completely detrimentally affected the team. And I got to give it to Westbrook for that one. Just completely classless.
Yeah, and of course, with all these major league teams moving to Las Vegas,
right.
Which is a town that really isn't big enough to support a major league team.
You can see him supporting football because a lot of people are going to fly in from out of town. But the baseball team, my Athletics,
And that's the thing is you can fly in for a Sunday game, but you're not gonna fly in for a 3 or 4 day homestand.
Especially because they're planning on playing the home games like at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So. As a prologue to and then people go to a show afterwards or gamble or anything. I mean, how bush league is that? I don't want to say minor league because we were just talking about how much we like the minor league. That's bush league.
Yeah.